So this year we have been talking a lot about Unitarian Universalist or UU tradition a lot. Why would we do that? Why would we take a whole year to do that? Well, because we are a UU fellowship. And it's important to know that, like the U unicorn, we didn't invent ourselves out of thin air. We are part of a larger whole, a tradition with history, roots, stories, failures, and heroes. Each month, we have been talking about one of our seven UU principles, and this month, we are focusing on the third UU principle, which says that we strive to accept one another and encourage each other to spiritual growth in our congregation. So that comes to us from the Unitarian Universalist Association. We here at this fellowship didn't make up those words. So this month we're talking about spiritual growth. And this is also affirmed in our own fellowship's mission statement. We say that our mission here in this place is to help people grow in mind and spirit. But what do we mean when we say spiritual growth? What do we mean when we say grow in spirit? Grow in mind, we can maybe understand more easily. It means learning new things, expanding our understanding of the world. But spirit? What do we mean when we say that word? That's a great question. Thank you for asking. It's one that I don't have a certain pat answer for. Because these words, spirit, spiritual, faith, even God, they don't have perfect definitions. They're squishy. But that doesn't mean that they're not useful. In fact, I believe it is exactly for that reason that these concepts can be more useful than facts in figuring out the big questions of what we believe to be true and meaningful. These words are metaphors. And any English major can tell you that metaphor, when used well, can be a powerful tool, as long as we allow that metaphor to be metaphor. When Romeo says, Juliet is the sun, he doesn't literally mean that she is the sun. That would be very dangerous for Romeo if she were. The Reverend Kendall Gibbons, who wrote the reading that we heard earlier, is a longtime UU minister and also a noted humanist, atheist, scholar. Kendall, like me, doesn't believe in a God as some guy who sits in the sky and grants our wishes. I too consider myself a skeptic and a humanist. But Kendall argues in a lecture that she gave several years ago that even humanists, even UUs, can develop a sense of spiritual maturity. That is, that we can grow in spirit as well as mind. She says in that lecture, quote, "Humans are developmental creatures. We mature in our greatest abilities physically, mentally, emotionally, and morally. Anything that prevents our moving through these stages in an organic way stunts us and keeps us from our greatest possible power and flourishing as human beings." She says, "I am persuaded that there is also a process of spiritual maturing that works in much the same way." Kendall continues, "Religious community exists to hold out the possibility, the importance of that inner ripening, to suggest that our humanity is most fully realized as we become more spiritually mature. This is the quality that the great mystics and sages have easily recognized in one another across all the varieties of religious and cultural traditions. It's what enables us to name Rumi and Gandhi, Schweitzer and Julian and the Dalai Lama all in the same breath." She goes on, "Religious community should be the place where we are called upon to grow up as spiritual people, where we learn to reach out of our embeddedness to toward a larger perspective, a new self-understanding. We hunger both in our congregations and in our culture for leaders who are spiritually mature, who can take their own process of meaning-making and ours as objects of contemplation and summon us to honor authentic reverence in whatever way it may be experienced or expressed. Kendall continues on to say that she, in her ministry, has been fortunate to witness a variety of examples of spiritual maturity in operation. And when she thinks of people who are genuinely happy, she thinks of those people: generous, humble, self-aware, merciful, loyal, wise. I know when I hear that list, I want to be like those people: happy, generous, humble, wise. The definition that Kendall offers us is that spiritual maturity is the ability to take our own process of meaning making and other people's processes of meaning making as the object of contemplation, the ability to examine those things. And that means that we have to allow ourselves to delve deeply into the human condition, to consider it reverently, not just to go about our days with assumptions and patterns and not consider why we do what we do, why we react the way we do, how we have come to this place and how we might continue to evolve in our connection, not only to ourselves and each other, but to the collective experiences and wisdom throughout time and space. Spiritual maturity is the ability to examine the experiences and ideas that we have, and the experiences and ideas that other people have, and acknowledge that there might be flaws in them, or that there might even be merit or genius in them, especially if we allow ourselves to encounter each other without our automatic defenses up. One of the primary purposes of this place, this Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, is to help us grow in spirit. That's why it's in our mission statement. To help us become more spiritually mature or spiritually fit. Because there are places that in the world that help us become more physically fit: hospitals, wellness centers, gyms, or more emotionally fit: counseling, therapy, support groups, or more intellectually fit: schools, universities, libraries. But spiritually fit, spiritually mature, that's us, religious communities. That's our whole job. And it's an expansive job. It involves social connections and friendships and fun. It involves justice work, expanding our awareness beyond ourselves into the wider world. But it also involves practicing the skills of expanding our ability to take our own processes of meaning making and other people's processes of meaning making as the object of contemplation. To allow ourselves to delve deeply into the human condition and consider it reverently. So in that lecture that Kendall Gibbons gave on spiritual maturity, she describes 12 signs, 12 things that you would know about someone if they were spiritually mature. And I'm only going to talk about one of them today. I wanted to explore the idea of spiritual maturity to begin with, before going into all of those 12 signs. I'm going to cover a few more of them at a sermon in May, and I would happily do a 12-part series on these 12 signs, and hey, maybe I will someday. But today, I'm starting with the one that I think we struggle with the most. And it's also the one that I think is the most crucial for understanding the other 11. That sign is our ability to use metaphor. To again quote Kendall's lecture, she says that, quote, "the spiritually maturing person develops an increasing comfort and fluency with the expressive power of metaphoric language and ritual." Spiritual maturity invites us to recognize and reflect on the necessarily symbolic character of any language, even that of mathematics. To express and share any knowledge, any experience with any other person, we have no choice but to use words. And words are always approximations of what we're trying to say. She goes on to say that when we emerge out of our embeddedness in language, the language that we know the most, that we understand then that literalism is impossible, and that all our communication is symbolic. Ritual vocabulary, she says, consists of images that have multiple overlapping and sometimes even conflicting meanings, but that is what gives them density and power. When we become adept in our use of such metaphoric expressions, our capacity to nurture our own and other people's spiritual lives is deepened and enriched. Now, I said earlier that I do not believe in God. That is a true statement. I, personally, do not believe that there is a God out there. But I do believe that God has the ability to be an incredibly powerful metaphor. For some people, they have had a personal experience of a God or gods in their lives, and who am I to doubt that experience? After all, personal experience and wonder is the first of our source horses, or sources of inspiration. But even if I haven't had that particular personal experience, I certainly have had, and would venture to say that many of you probably have had, experiences of wonder, expansiveness, interconnection, and love. The mystics throughout the times, throughout cultures, throughout the ages, have strived to capture these experiences that we share, and inevitably, their words always fall short of the true experience because words are limited. And so some of us, not all of us, but some of us use words like God or faith or spirituality because there aren't other fabulous words to help us capture the expansiveness of these experiences, which are different from person to person, community to community. I often say that I don't believe in God, but I still love God. Our own hymn, Spirit of Life, that we sang earlier, we're singing it all this month, is an attempt to name this thing, this experience. Spirit of Life, come unto me, stir in my heart. It's calling out to something greater than ourselves, begging that thing to come to us, to move in our hearts, to stir us to compassion. Is the Spirit of Life an actual spirit? Is it a ghost? Does it have a body, or is it see-through? Does it walk around or fly? No. None of these things, not really, not exactly. If I asked each one of you to define the Spirit of Life for yourself, every one of us would probably do it a little differently. But we allow that metaphor to exist in the song because it would be terribly unwieldy and very, very long and not very effective to try to define the Spirit of Life exactly in the hymn. And yet we don't throw that song out of our hymnal. In fact, it's one of the most beloved hymns, not just here at this fellowship, but throughout Unitarian Universalism. In fact, and this is true, the hymn Spirit of Life regularly makes it to the final four in the annual Most UU Thing Ever competition, which is a March Madness kind of thing that happens online. Posted by the UU World magazine. Really, Spirit of Life's popularity often comes up against lighting the chalice as the most UU thing ever. It just goes to show how far a metaphor can take us if we let it. If we don't question it until all meaning is lost. The song that we will sing later in this service is another example of metaphor. It's 6 verses long. We're only going to sing 4 of those verses. But this song that we're going to sing uses the word God a lot. But it talks about God as a mother, a father, a child, an elder. All of these different possibilities for what God could be. And God is all of them. And of course, none of them. Metaphor can be a powerful tool in our ability to use it flexibly, to allow it to change, to grow, without demanding that it have a single meaning, is one of the signs of spiritual maturity. Reverend Kendall Gibbons describes metaphor in another article that she wrote that we heard earlier from D, Human Reverence. Kendall describes how she grew up as a UU. She was a born-in Unitarian Universalist growing up in the 60s. And she says she was denied the tools, the words, the rituals, the sources, to understand herself as a spiritual being. She acknowledges that her parents and her RE teachers thought that they were providing her freedom by eliminating those things from her education. But for her, it just felt like deprivation. She ends her article on the language of reverence by encouraging us to reclaim it, not to allow these words and concepts to only get claimed by groups that would use those words and concepts to harm. Because certainly these words and concepts have been used and are continuing to be used to create walls to exclude. We have the capacity as Unitarian Universalists to reclaim these words and concepts in a way that can give them back their life, that can build bridges instead of walls. But if we hear a word, whatever that word is, and we say, I know what that word means. That word means such and such because that is how the way my church of my childhood used that word. And we are allowing that word, that concept, to have too much power over us. We're allowing it to stunt our spiritual maturity. Kendall Gibbons says, quote, "We must not succumb to the fettering, literal-mindedness that afflicts us today no less than those who came before us. Rejecting religious language because we cannot believe it literally is just as constraining as believing that we must do exactly as it says." The first time I read this lecture, that was the line that stood out to me the most. First time I read this lecture, that line is the one that stood out to me the most. That fettering literal-mindedness, that phrase. Now, we would all probably agree that people who read one particular scripture and only allow it to have one meaning are being literalist. God made the earth in 7 days. It must have been exactly 7 days. That is what we call literalism. And we would probably agree that literalism is neither useful nor accurate, especially when referring to religious texts or ideas. That literalism can confine. It traps, it fetters. This idea that somehow we UUs are more open-minded, more flexible in our thinking can only be true if we refuse to be literalists. To repeat Kendall's words, rejecting religious language because we cannot believe it literally is just as constraining as believing that we must do exactly as it says. Now, I realize that this can be hard work, unlearning the meanings that we were taught. I realize that it can sometimes be painful work. I honor that. And we are here. We here at the fellowship, your ministers, your staff, your lay leaders, your worship leaders, your pastoral care team, we exist here to help you heal from religious wounds. But we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Don't worry, no babies were harmed in the making of this service. It's just a metaphor. We can't throw out all the religious concepts entirely and pretend that we can make everything from scratch. That's the height of hubris. We can find new hope, new meaning in old concepts. We can wrestle with, we can discuss and debate and explore these concepts in new ways that give them new power and new meaning. And as Kendall says to close her article, we must re-examine and reclaim these metaphors, quote, if for no other reason than for the sake of the children that we must otherwise raise in the spiritual vacuum of our own resentments. In the process, we might find ourselves improved in modesty and maturity, as well as vocabulary, and that in itself would be no bad thing. May that be so.